Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
All right, here's my best attempt. The start part. Welcome back to Friends from Work, a podcast about all things in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, hosted by me, Kyle Schoenewill, and my longtime friend from work, sitting right over here, Robbie Earle. And I'm bringing in the almost polar opposite amount of energy from last week's episode. I am ready to go, man. Back in Nashville, a top 5 city in America, and back and ready to go. By the way, we had some really funny comments of like, man, you're really going to go after New Orleans like that after remember it? We're still reeling over here. Apologies to anyone from New Orleans last week. I am so excited to be here back home, ready to talk about this absolute banger. Robbie, before I even ask you how you are, I want to say, because I'm not going to get a chance to do this, I think, on Screensaver, just given timing, I got a chance.
Oh, yeah, no, I wanted to hear about it.
Yeah, I got a chance to see an early showing of The Fall Guy, which is the new Ryan Gosling connection to last week, and Emily Blunt movie, and our boy M'Baku is in it.
Oh, that's right.
And it's really good. It's really good. I'm not going to do a screensaver episode for timing, and just because I feel like it's one of those films that there's not much I can add to it. Like, just go watch it and have fun. There's nothing I'm going to say it's going to blow your mind one way or the other. But it very much feels like Game Night. The other kind of this new genre of rom-com, borderline action thriller, even though it's a rom-com movie. And I love it. I love that these movies kind of lean into the positivity of the relationship. Like, have you seen Game Night?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah.
The whole movie is not about, you know, guy meets girl, they get married or fall in love, and then there's drama, right? You find out they have a checkered past, and the whole movie's kind of about them falling apart, or like, that was the rom-com, I feel like, of the 2000s. And yeah, I like this, that like that entire movie of Game Night, you never really feel like they're going to break up, or like the tension's not between them. They're a team, and that's kind of a fun. I love that. And that's kind of what this is a little bit too. Not exactly, but you leave feeling somewhat positive. It's also really fun.
I like that.
And I think it's going to have a high score in Rotten Tomatoes. I think when I looked after the showing last night, it had 87%, which is really high for a rom-com action, you know, comedy. So there you go. No, there's my little preview of The Fall Guy. How are you?
I'm great. I did not see The Fall Guy this week, but I did see Spider-Man 3.
Oh, yeah. That was your Monday showing?
That was my Monday showing.
And?
Candace went with me. We had a great time. Man, that movie is just so... There's so much. There's so much to say that most of it's been said in some way anyway, but...
The horror, the brutality of it.
The brutality of it. I feel like more than ever, I was sitting there thinking, man, I do not have, like, I've already got too many hobbies. And like, I know how long it's taken you to get as good at video editing as you are now.
Sure.
But I'm sitting there watching it thinking like, man, if I knew how to do any kind of video editing, I would absolutely make a new cut of this movie. Wow. Like, I'm more convinced than ever that you could improve the movie by like at least 20 to 30% just by cuts. Like, obviously, ideally, you would have new scenes or replacement scenes, but I think even like within certain sequences, you could cut out certain things and kind of salvage these moments from that movie. Because the thing is, like, I'm sitting there watching some of the action sequences and stuff, and some of the same thoughts that I had during Spider-Man 2. I'm like, you know, Raimi does have, he's got such a style, like when it comes to his direction, like all of these things, like the whole Sandman fight with like the black suit Spider-Man.
Right. He's got to zoom in and on as many eyeballs as possible.
Oh, of course. Of course. It's like, but they're all kind of noteworthy. Like he's got a good feel for how to make like a superhero fight feel iconic. And I'm like, if you just, like, there are some visuals that I would love to be able to like salvage from that movie and cut a lot of other things out. But
why don't you?
I don't know how to do. I barely know how to like get into this video recording session, yeah. Let alone like
that's true.
Do any kind of editing. But if anyone out there,
why don't you send me for a send me some notes? Project. Send me some notes, and I'll import the entire film into Adobe Premiere Pro. And we'll just start chopping it up. Get rid of a few things, reorganize a few things.
Change the world.
That would be a great birthday present for you, by the way, wouldn't it?
Oh, that man.
I just showed up with your edits of Spider-Man 3, see if I can salvage it. Oh, by the way, you also just said heal the world. Scenario. I've just begun my replay of it.
Ah, nice.
And I forgot how dope that moment is when he first starts saying heal the world. You're like, oh my gosh, mm-hmm. I know.
Man, yeah, I've been replaying and having a lot of fun, especially as I've been doing the like Monday movie watches. And
yeah,
I don't want to get ahead of ourselves, but like, man, what a fun times for Spider-Man fans, especially those that were raised in the
90s.
I
knew you'd be champing at the bit to get here. I knew it. I thought of you right away. Like,
man,
my first thought was not, oh, Spider-Man. It was, oh, Robbie. That was my first gut reaction.
It's,
well, it's let's just get into it. Let's get into it.
Yeah. Yeah.
X-Men 97 episode 8, Tolerance is Extinction Part 1. I have so many big overarching thoughts, but let's just start there real quick. The Spider-Man thing. You got your shot of him. Although there's no voice. So you don't know.
No voice. But apparently, Greg sent me a screenshot of a tweet where someone asked Bo if that was in fact the same Spider-Man. Which it would. I mean, that would make sense given everything we've talked about and the other universe or other like in-universe characters that showed up in this episode. But so the fact that like they specifically asked, is that Christopher Daniel Barnes Spidey, which is the voice of the Peter Parker Spider-Man from that series, and Bo said yes.
Okay.
So even if we never get any speaking roles from him in this season, I now feel like at least, given that we like had a full-on scene with Captain America, we had like a Doctor Doom speaking role, a Zemo speaking role, like I have to believe that it's possible that if not this season, next season, we get some of that.
Yeah.
But even like what's so hard to you would probably feel this way about like the kind of core classic RDJ Iron Man design. If it showed up in the right way, like not in an animated context, but like a live action context. Mm-hmm. But I'm trying to think what the closest analog would be. Like, obviously a Spider-Man mask is a Spider-Man mask, mm-hmm. but the way that they animated that exactly as you would remember it from the 90s series, like there are just little details about the way the like the eyes are and the costume where it's like even not getting the speaking role, there was a little, you know, jolt.
I was gonna ask electricity. You that. Even if there wasn't a voice, could you recognize it? The answer seems to be yes. Hey,
yeah,
by the way,
yeah,
I am not here to judge at all. Bo clearly knows what he's doing. My one piece of advice is I'd probably change your Twitter profile to a picture where you have clothes on. It's yeah. so strange to me that his Twitter profile is him shirtless.
Well,
hey Bo, let's put some clothes on. Okay.
I mean that is the, at some point we're going to have to kind of figure it out and talk about it, but like,
oh yeah, I know what you're going to say. Oh no. Oh,
I mean,
no.
I feel like that is part of what maybe was going on. Like I've heard that there was some weird online interactions and things with Bo. It's been so strange for that to have happened right when the series came out and write when everyone has such great things to say about what he contributed creatively.
For our friend Steve out there. Well, like that, by the way? Yes. Steve instead of Captain America.
Yeah, yeah, nice.
Bo DeMeo, I don't know what it is, was the showrunner for X-Men 97 and was for the entire length of the promo. And like literally maybe 1 month before, we had an interview set up with him. And then all of a sudden we got a notification from Disney that said, hey, you know what? Bo's actually not going to be available. Here are some other people. And it was very strange. Well, Marvel never put out like an official statement, but all of a sudden Bo was kicked off the show after he made the whole thing. There are rumors that some inappropriate stuff happened or whatnot. We know nothing. They never said like an official, like he was fired. I don't even think, right? It just kind of, he just disappeared from the whole promo thing and his name was off stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I do think he's like, I think it is, whether they officially acknowledged it, I know that there have been like official reports, you know, credible reports that he was fired.
Okay. So, but he is still super proud of the show. So on Twitter, he is still live tweeting and promoing the show. Like there's not enough bad blood that he's like blocked it out of his memory. He's still doing all the Q&As by himself now without Marvel and Disney. And he's actually saying really cool and helpful stuff to the actual series, but obviously something still went down. So I have no idea what that relationship is. But on top of all that, if you were let go and fired from your passion project that you are so passionate about and you love for some kind of sexual weirdness on set, maybe put some clothes on in your profile picture.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Even more so, maybe that would be helpful.
Then maybe be a step in the direction of like, hey, look, I'm trying to improve on the allegations, you know?
Yeah, man. I mean, my last comment here, and then we can move in, because I have one more sort of spider related thing out of that. But it does make me nervous because even the interviews that we've conducted with folks working on the show, it just seems like Bo had such like he was so central to the whole thing. Like he cared about it so much. Like I think he wrote Remember It, I think by himself, if I remember correctly. And
last week, the Newton brothers said, we didn't know as much as Bo, though, you know?
Right. And so I feel like I'm a little like this show has just been so good. And this episode was maybe my favorite of other than Remember It.
I think so too.
And it's just like, I just really hope that if they are like parting ways with Bo permanently moving forward, like I hope that they can figure out a way to continue this quality level. Cause I don't like it, this just feels like such a unique thing.
You're not saying for the finale of this season, you're saying for season two.
Right. Right. Yeah. Cause I,
well,
I
maybe put a shirt on this. And you can get hired again.
I know. Golly. That's what, you know, if that's what it takes, maybe that's too much.
You can't contain it. I mean, he's a good looking dude. I get it.
Yeah. I mean, that's true. If I had those pecs.
Oh gosh. Okay. Back to the episode.
So, the Spider-Man connection here that I wanted to run by you, because I know you're a huge fan of Across the Spider-Verse. The comment early on by Beast, where he's like, the mystics at Kamertage say that, or they speak of these absolute points.
Oh, yeah.
And I love that, because we're now seeing that, like, that's obviously from What If, from the Stephen Strange episode in season one, where it's like, no matter what he does, he can't change the fact that it's Christine dies, I think. And then also that's really what Across the Spider-Verse is doing when they're talking about these, like, what do they call them? Origin?
Oh gosh. I should know this because I've seen it.
Canon moments.
Canon moments, yeah.
Where it's like the same, like you
same
can't
exact thing.
Prevent it.
And then by so the seeing way, that and by come the way, up here. So fascinating to also have just watched X-Men Days of Future Past, because there's not one right way or another, but they approach it the total opposite total opposite, which is like, if you change something in the past, the future then that you changed it from never existed. You basically start over, clean slate. But Across the Spider-Verse, and now here, like you said, a reference to Kamar-Taj, and the MCU says opposite, which is kind of like, there might be these absolute points, but like in Endgame, it creates branch timelines, and that's the whole thing with like alternate universes, not just redoing the one. But yes, I love using the same terminology. Like it feels like even if this isn't in the same, well, it's in the multiverse, I guess, but it's starting to sync things up by just using the same terminology as What If, but then also as like Across the Spider-Verse.
And I do wonder, I wonder if that's going to start linking some things up, not Across the Spider-Verse, although who knows, like if on the animated side, maybe they would do something fun there. I mean,
Donald Glover was in it, dude.
So. Yeah, no, exactly. That's a good point. I think with the MCU side of it, I am curious. When What If first came out, at least Feige was clear that that was supposed to be kind of an extension of what was first introduced in Loki, which I think like is supposed to give us the sense that the rules that we see playing out in What If are the rules to some degree, like within the MCU. And especially because, you know, it's like everything's kind of branching off of the sacred timeline. There's also like the language in Loki where it's like, oh, you know, the Avengers were supposed to do that. And I do wonder if we're going to start to see a clearer picture of how like these absolute points would work in the MCU context.
Right.
And how that would like even if you can go and branch off, like are there certain things that like
no matter how many times you branch, maybe there's still an absolute point?
Yeah. I mean, because that would seem to be the case with, you know, if you look at that Stephen Strange episode again. And again, I don't want to get too far into it because this episode isn't that much about that, but I did really like the connective tissue there.
10 trillion percent. That's my first note. I'm also just loving the connective tissue to so many things that I now recognize. Did you catch the Stark Expo flyer in Bastion's childhood home? I mean, obviously seeing Spider-Man. How about for me just seeing him talk to Dr. Doom? Seeing him talk to Zemo, that's what the subtitle said. Again, there's more too. Obviously, the Kamar-Taj thing we were talking about. There was just so many tie-ins that I'm starting to be like, this is fun for me. Again, I understand it's not the MCU, but to give me points that I recognize are just enhancing it.
Well, and what's so fun about it is, and I think I saw maybe Brad Winterbaum said this, but What If is inherently constrained by like it's asking questions that relate to like the MCU, you know, and we've talked in our reviews about how well they follow through on that premise, but it's like there's not really a place in that show to do what we're seeing them do here, which is just kind of explore a very classic iteration of like Marvel Comics characters interacting, like where it's there doesn't need to be any tie or analog to the MCU, where it really is like DC did this so well for years with the animated universe that started with the Batman series that everyone always talks about from the 90s, where like that so much spun out of that from like Superman to Justice League to Batman Beyond, and it really does feel like its own self-contained, fleshed out DC universe that I think a lot of people would say is stronger than any like cinematic universe they've ever created. And I'm not saying that this is competing with the MCU or anything like that, but this is the first time like in this episode that I felt like Marvel was even trying for something like that, where I was like, man, I like all of the characters like Zemo, Dr. Doom, they're like the most kind of quintessential cartoony costumes because they don't have to, like they're just building out the universe. Like it's not like they need to introduce Dr. Doom and have a whole Doom episode or Zemo episode or even like Spider-Man.
No, it's but the they're perfect just letting Easter you know, egg because like, they could do that in season 2, Dr. Doom or something.
and just letting you know, like, this is the kind of state of the world.
Right. Captain America's there. Spider-Man's here.
Yeah.
Hulk is here. Just heads up.
And I love the Stark call out, because I noticed again that the color of the collars is like that golden and red that looks very Stark-esque. Boy.
That's conspiratorial, as you said last week.
Yeah, I don't think that the reason it kind of was something that I flagged is because in the X-Men comics at the moment, a kind of big piece of this like fall of X storyline is that the folks making Sentinels have misappropriated Stark tech. And so you have these like super, super advanced, basically giant Iron Man Sentinels.
Mm.
And so it's a really interesting, like with Tony being the futurist, it's a really great way of fleshing out the evolution theme that's at the core of the X-Men, where it's like the biology versus technology debate. And that's obviously central to this. And so I thought it was really interesting to have in the Bastion, you know, background moment, the Tony Stark thing on the wall. And again, I don't think that Tony is supposed to be like caught up in any of it, but I do feel like it's an intentional decision to highlight him in an episode about trying to kind of like out evolve the mutants.
I mean, there's a tiny chance that he helped make some of that tech with the government, right? Because all we heard was Forge, yeah. I think, say that he helped the government build some of those bands.
Yeah.
But it didn't
say. And there's something about a Scottish scientist, right?
I mean, I'm just saying it's possible that Tony was a part of that government.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Well, and the Tony Stark, that's the other fun thing here is like, the Tony Stark that I remember from this universe, because he shows up in a Spider-Man 2-part episode as well. And then there was also an Iron Man show. But like, he is very much, you know, it's like Guardians of the Galaxy, where when you look at Tony Stark in the comics, there is a pre-RDJ and a post-RDJ. And now if you were to pick up a Marvel comic that has Iron Man in it, it's going to read like RDJ. Yeah, like that's what they're trying to put on the page, because it's like that is what people now like about the character.
Sure, but that makes sense. Before
like
that,
the 90s
totally
version
different.
Was not yeah. really, he was like kind of a corporate guy and like not, he wasn't charming in that way. And so it's like I could see them, again, not making him a villain, but I think that it would be believable that like that character would be involved in building things like
sure.
that, or at least like unintentionally involved.
All right, we'll be right back. Today's episode is brought to you by our friends at Nerd Riot. NerdRiot.shop has all of the best nerd merchandise that your heart desires, including some current X-Men 97 runs, like a run of Remember It and those kind of shirts, or classic throwback to the Ziggy Star-Lord shirt that I'm wearing today, or the Xavier sweatshirt that Robbie's wearing today. It's some of my favorite stuff because a lot of the merchandise is some of that, if you know, you know, kind of thing. And I get so many compliments on these shirts, like this one or my Baby Groot Nirvana shirt. So check out our friends at NerdRiot.shop. They have anything you need in the nerd world, including Star Wars, DC, etc. NerdRiot.shop. Use promo code FRIENDSFROMWORK.
You should go check out Organic Press Books. I've been talking a good bit about the Grant Morrison X-Men Omni that I finally received right before we recorded last episode. You can see that on video there. But I've also recently gotten a copy of their Jonathan Hickman Ultimate Universe stuff and am really looking forward to diving into that as we are moving ahead on our Hickman Avengers. And we are releasing this week, actually, our next stop on the Hickman Avengers comic book club journey. So there are a lot of things from those books themselves to related to X-Men Omnis that you can grab on organic priced books. They are the best way to read comics, and it is the cheapest way to find them. So go there and use code friends from work to get even more of a discount. And you won't regret it.
All right, Robbie, I would like to, for 5 minutes maximum, get way too serious for 1 second. So this is going to get real life. Let's just have a conversation. One of the lines that I absolutely loved from this episode, which I think is so poignant to today's culture, I wrote it down. Bastian specifically says, when referencing Genosha, overload their bandwidth, too much to compute. Because when your skin is not in the game, apathy is your answer. And I feel that tension a lot in real life, which is that there's this weird balance we're trying to kind of ride as humans, which is it's really good and helpful to be in the know about all kinds of things, world issues, et cetera, like things that are so grand in scale. Like there's a line of being passionate about what you're passionate about to help make a difference and knowing all that stuff. Versus, I think what kind of started happening with social media, the internet, and even the COVID era, which is, I think it's also possible for people to get overloaded with bad news that our brains just can't comprehend, that there is a bandwidth that we have. And when you're constantly just taking shots from this awful thing happened on the other side of the world, and this awful thing happened in Canada, and this awful thing happened over here, and that's all you do all day is like just take in all this bad news, I think sometimes the answer is you're almost paralyzed and not able to make any real change. And so for me, what's been really helpful is, okay, when all that stuff's happening, I can't control that. Like, I can't control what's happening in Israel right now. I can't change it. What I can do is affect my community. How can I make a difference in my neighborhood? Like, to my neighbors that need help, how can so I have to kind of make it small scale. I say that all to say, I just love that line. I feel like that's so poignant. A tragedy like Genosha happens, and Bastian, the evil guy in this case, his plan is like, well, we'll just overload them with bad information and they won't be able to handle all of it. So then nothing will happen.
Isn't that interesting? It's like the death of a single person can be such a touch point or a touchstone. Like, I think you've seen, you know, over the last 100 years, countless movements that came out of like a single story like that someone can latch onto, like when it's one person or a group of people. But yeah, it's like if you can relate to it and like wrap your head around it as something that like, oh, that could have happened to me, that could have happened to like a friend of mine or a family member or whatever. But yeah, it's like once it becomes this like amorphous, you know, millions of people dying, like that's, you can't even figure out how to compute that. Like, we're not really like meant to.
Yeah. Well, and like if you lived in 500 AD, you didn't have the choice. Like, you didn't hear about what was happening in Russia, for example, if you lived in South America, right? Like, you just didn't even know.
If you lived in 1900, you know, it's like you would get that stuff.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm not saying that's better, because it also allows for evil to like fly under the radar, probably easier. But I do think there's a limit to the human brain. You know, like emotionally, and what you can make an impact on. And yeah, that's a new thing. Not even 1900. Well, you had newspapers and stuff, but the fact that now we find out everything instantly, like if something happens in North Korea, you hear about it right now. That's a bad example because of the way they handled news. Yeah. But like, yeah, I mean, like anywhere you would hear it right away. And like, again, there's a balance of, if that is something you're passionate about and you can make a difference there, or like it, like you said, it becomes small scale for you. Like, let's say you have a friend in Palestine or Israel or whatever. Now all of a sudden it is small scale. Maybe you can make a difference there. But for the most part, the constant barrage, there's a threshold, I believe. And sometimes I have to just go, okay, how can I help my neighbor today? Because I can't help there.
It is
And I mean, almost like it's almost like the raising awareness trend, you know?
Uh-huh.
It's almost like there's a threshold there where it kind of backfires. Do you feel that way? Like, I feel like if you raise so much awareness, it becomes just so nonchalant that, to your point, it no longer impacts you. It's just like, oh, we're raising awareness for cancer. You don't feel that until my dad had cancer. Then you're like, oh, frick, which was what happened. But when it's just like this, like you saying, with this generic, like, oh, I don't know. I almost feel like, again, to Bastian's point, I don't think the human mind can take all of the bandwidth. Like, there is a, there's a finite amount emotionally that we can handle. Anyways, I just thought that line was genius.
and I think the genius of following that up with the party that Roberto's mom is throwing, that's like, know, humans for mutants of Genosha or like whatever the banner says. But
while
it's like,
the irony of all this stuff is happening, and that's the party they're throwing.
And even down, like, she's letting them take away her son, but it's like she's responding in the way that we so often respond to those things, like where it's like, okay, we're going to raise awareness, or we're going to do this like fundraiser thing. And not to say that those aren't helpful and impactful, but it is like this show is clearly keying into like the people that aren't affected by this actually, like the non-mutants. Yeah, it's just such a, like, you get the sense that it's going to be kind of a passing thing for them, and they're sort of riding the wave, not like that they're coming from an evil place, but that it's just clearly there's a disconnect.
Right.
And yeah, I thought the way that the writing for Bastian, but I also thought Theo James, who voices him, did an excellent job.
Oh, it's like, this is one of those
where I was like, man, what a great performance.
And just to be clear, I want to reiterate what you just said. It's not that, I'm not trying to say that raising awareness or fundraising is bad. I think if that aligns with your passions, it can be amazing. I'm you know what I'm saying? There's a threshold though. I think, you know, it's not bad. That part's not bad, but yes, the disconnect of like what that next scene shows, that's kind of what I'm talking about. Whereas it's an easy thing for his mother to do, to say she's checking the box of like, well, I'm not anti-mutants. But when it comes down to it and her son's actually a mutant, she feels the embarrassment in front of all the other people. She immediately caves and turns him in. So though raising awareness is doing nothing. In fact, it's probably hurting because it comes off as hypocritical if your son's a mutant, right? Again, so everyone at that party like that are shocked that her son's a mutant. That's just a box checked. And that's I think there's this weird cultural gray area.
Yeah. Well, especially because, you know, it's like you think about like the social media movements and things, and it's like it gives you a way to check a box and feel as though you've done something without actually having to sacrifice anything, you know? So it's like, I think it's interesting, like in her case, she's throwing this like fundraiser party, but she's super wealthy and kind of, you know, in the social elite. So that's not really any, like, that's not a hardship for her. You know, it's not like there's some people where like to go out and like, you know, and this is why it's so case specific. Like if you're going to go and like try to raise awareness in such a way where like you're going to have to like often choose between going to work and like going to like protest. And like those are hard decisions people are making that I think are meaningful. But I think that this show is keying into this like surface level, like I'm going to give of something that I have like an abundance of. But whenever it comes down to the thing that's actually difficult for me to give, which is like giving up some like respect in her case, like what she views as like being respected by her peers, like she would have to surrender some of that, at least in her mind, to now like side with her son in that way. And it's like, you know, which we kind of got previewed in, I guess, last episode. In the conversation that they had, but yeah, it's such a complicated conversation, but I think that that's part of the reason why I talk about hoping that they can continue to capture some of this, because I think Bo was coming into the show really clear about what he was trying to, you know, like as a, he's like a gay black man that's writing this show, and he's clearly trying to like channel his own experience, and he's been pretty explicit about that. And I think that shows through, and I think that it's that like personal connection that allows for these really nuanced moments.
I love that we're having the conversation today. I also love that, to your point, the show is not forcing us to have it, but that we're watching an animated X-Men show that has themes that are this poignant and big and important, mm-hmm. to where we can talk about those and still be talking about them inside of an X-Men 97 breakdown. That's pretty cool.
Right.
Like, that's not what I expected from this series. A little bit shifting gears here. I am in love with Bastion. Not obviously what he's doing. Oh, there's the thumbs up. We never changed it. I'll do one too then just to make it easy. Maybe I fixed mine. Mine are gone.
Oh, well.
For Steve out there. Anytime. Oh, there it is.
Oh, there you go.
Anytime we hold our hands up, it does a thumbs up on the screen. Okay. Obviously not what he's doing. I'm not saying I love him. Like, I don't agree with Thanos either.
Right.
But I love the Thanos style approach to it. The whole thing. I'm with you, mm-hmm. that the second he walked in, the voice actor just worked maybe even better than others. Like, I was just like, okay, I buy this. That's the first thing. The mm-hmm. way he's animated his presence. Yes. Another box checked. But also I kind of am loving that the big bad of this series isn't a Mr. Sinister type. Like, yes, that's fun to do the Doctor Strange-esque hell, like magical. Like, I get that, but to have it be this like normal guy that's never losing his temper and just kind of walking around. Uh-huh. That's, I don't know. That's my kind of villain. I'm really into everything about it. Now getting a little bit of a backstory and seeing what his plan is being revealed. For me, this is becoming like a huge win across the board.
Yeah. Yeah. Which I did not like even last episode, I didn't foresee myself being that hooked by the character. Like I wasn't uninterested, but like everything we got here, I love too that we got his backstory, but that it's not he was created to be this. You know, it's not necessarily the thing where it's like he was this guy who was hurt in the specific way by mutants and now is like coming out and wants to take down mutants, because that would give it more of like an anger motivation. But I like that it is sort of Thanos-esque. Like, it's very cold and calculated and like rational in its own way.
He's rationalized what he thinks is the correct thing.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I mean, I have two other shout outs and then that's it for me. What? Oh my gosh. Balloons now? I got to turn this off. It's ruining our video portion of the podcast.
I love that it's like the video feature is like, oh, thank God, only two more things. Bring out the balloons.
Bring out the balloons. Let's celebrate. He's got two more. The music here was fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So here's the thing. When I came into X-Men 97, I never thought the music would be a talking point of an animated series. Like, that's just, I don't know. My brain didn't go there. I unfairly put this show in a box. I have a feeling when we finally get the record, as the Newton brothers said last week, which, by the way, go listen to that conversation, in May, which is coming up in a few weeks, that it's going to feel like it would fit alongside anything in our journey through the MCU. Like, this felt incredibly cinematic. I don't know if you had a chance to listen to it. It was definitely a full-blown real orchestra, not programmed. I mean, the music that was playing underneath the attack when the Sentinel attack started the whole time, I mean, probably a five-minute piece, really good. Like top-tier stuff.
Well, and the track that plays during the Wolverine Nightcrawler fight, starting just with the Nightcrawler, like,
right, which he talked about last week. Andy, I think, said like there's a longer version of that. That felt like kind of a longer version of it a little bit.
And I love that it was like, you know, but in such a different way. Like, we talked about how, like, when they first introduced Nightcrawler in the Remember It episode, it was so playful and that they were almost going for this kind of like circus.
Yeah, right, vibe. Right.
And man, yeah, I just that the music being so like immediately recognizable and like to me, like there are not I love moments when I am aware of the music, like you're saying, where it's like I'm suddenly aware of how good it is and how much work it's doing. And like I caught that and wrote down a note like the music, holy cow. And then the scene that that kicked off, like the extended sequence between Nightcrawler and Wolverine, was so cool and well done. And just like everything that I would want in like an X-Men fight scene. Like those are two of the coolest X-Men characters. And like
that's
the
such
reveal
a good point.
Of the three swords. And
yeah, that's such a good point because I feel like, yeah, there's kind of three obvious outcomes. There are projects where I am going through the MCU and I'm just not that aware of the music. Like, yes, it serves mm-hmm. its purpose, but I don't get to the end of the series or the movie and go, oh, I need that. And then sometimes we talk to the composer afterward or we put it on the playlist. And then when you get to dive mm-hmm. through it, you can find some cool moments. But I mean, I've even talked about that with, like, for example, here's one that I was way wrong on, like the Batman, how like oh, all right. I was really aware of was the boom, 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 boom in the theater. And I was wrong on that because mm-hmm. when I actually went back and watched it multiple times and when I've listened, it's actually some of his best work ever. I mean, just magnificent.
Yeah.
Magnificent music. But sometimes I leave a project and go, okay, the music served its purpose, but I can't remember anything. Then there are times where you remember the music, but for a bad reason. And I felt that sometimes, even just being totally transparent, I felt that a little bit with like the Falcon theme from Henry Jackman at times, uh-huh. where I'm like, okay, I'm totally aware of what you're doing, and I just don't think I really get down with it.
Yeah.
And that's happened a few times where like I think this is a misstep. And then obviously sometimes it's a needle drop where it's like, this is not the vibe I would have gone for.
Right.
But to your last point, the other obvious outcome is what's happening in these last few episodes of this show, which is that I'm now becoming aware of the music and it's like a home run. So mm-hmm. you've gone from an offensive lineman to where I just don't even really, I don't notice you to now you're a receiver and you're catching touchdowns. And it's like, okay,
wow.
like it's in the limelight and wow, it's nailing it. And I'm not just saying that because we talked to him last week. Like, yeah. you know, our listeners know this. There have been people that we talk to and I really appreciate what they do and they're amazing, but I'm not as passionate about the work. Here, right. I'm like, dang, for an animated series, they're like killing this. That's it. And by the way, I felt yeah. the same way, probably to a more extreme degree, with Daniel Pemberton in Across the Spider-Verse, with just how yeah. impactful that music was, even in an animated series. So it is possible to do it for sure.
Man, which I would love to get Pemberton on as well.
Oh gosh, that don't get me started. Absolutely. In fact, yeah, let's reach out. We got to figure that out right now.
We should. I think he and I think last time we had John Pisano on, I think he talked about.
Did he reference him?
Like I think that they're buds.
The last 5 minutes of that movie to start a band is the track. I mean, it's one of my favorite pieces of music uh-huh. I've ever heard.
Wow.
And then the drums start at the end with Gwen. God. Uh-huh. And it's like all escalating.
Dude, I mean, the opening of like the whole kind of Gwen cold open of that movie, the music there. Is.
Anytime Oscar Isaac's Spider-Man shows up, he has that crazy synth
yeah.
thing. And it's really cool. Okay. I'll let you talk. I promise. I'm going to wrap it with this. I love and appreciate now that this is a series. It's not a movie. And so we're analyzing individual episodes, but now it's easier to see how they've given certain characters moments all throughout the show. So like, mm-hmm. yeah, we haven't had Storm in a while, but I'm anticipating it's going to make an epic, like episode 9 or 10 moment when she shows up, yeah. just like now Charles is showing up. So it's like,
right.
we sidelined Magneto for a little bit, only to give him an incredible moment here where he goes to a pole. I'm assuming he's going to the South Pole, like a pole or a North Pole.
Uh-huh.
And he's using that pole, right, to magnetically shut down all the machines across the entire world.
Yeah, I think it's like a massive EMP kind of a thing.
Right. But to give him a moment after he's been sidelined, right? And like, you know, we talked about how Jubilee had her moment in her episode, and then I anticipate a Storm thing. I mean, there's going to be an entrance of Storm that's going to blow our minds, right? Like in a moment where they need her most, she's going to float in and have a giant thunderstorm or... but well, I'm appreciating all these different little like check-ins. Like we got the Summers moment, which by the way, the guy who voices Cable sounds like Josh Brolin, isn't Josh Brolin Cable in Deadpool?
Right. Yeah.
Okay. And he's also Deadpool Thanos too. He sounds like him here, whoever's voicing him. Anyways, you know what I'm saying? The Summers moment and they go on kind of a mission now. And obviously Gambit had his moment and Rogue had hers. And so now she's sidelined here. And now Nightcrawler kind of gets a moment and Wolverine gets a moment. He hasn't really been a part of this a ton. Like, I don't know. It's intentional.
No, that's a good point. Like that's why I loved like the Wolverine Nightcrawler moment so much, because those are characters that are fan favorites that they've almost like, they've held back to some degree.
Good point.
You know, it's like we've gotten
in the past.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's like, it made it so, like, well-earned whenever we finally got it here. But yeah, man, and that Magneto, like, the execution of that, also a really incredible musical moment with, like, the choir. But they, like, her saying the Magneto was right line, right as he is, like, unleashing this attack on the entire planet, was so dope that it was just, like, I would have thought it would be really difficult to figure out what to do with Magneto, like in the immediate, like I could kind of see a world where down the line he comes back and he's jaded by all of it or something. But I, you know, this was perfect. Like the fact that we saw him like kind of attempt to sacrifice himself for all these other mutants in Genosha, then see him, he's not dead, but he's captured, which is kind of worse. And seeing like the number still from,
but still not talking, still not responding to her. And then the human seeing the number and realizing, like,
And it's so heavy that like, and to think about what he gave up, you know, that he was always saying that this is how it would go. And like, so we as the viewer are kind of like, yeah, dang, Magneto was right, though. Everything that he was always saying would happen. Like, even if you still view him as like a villain, like, it's not like this is some misunderstanding. Like, exactly what he always said would happen is now like it's taken everything from him and from all of these other mutants. And so it's like such a, like a moment of triumph for him that's also like really sad and dark. And you think about like the impact that that's about to have on the world, where like, yes, it took out all the Sentinels, but also like hospitals, you know, that are now not able to function. Like, there's going to be some kind of reckoning. And to then like follow that with the Charles reveal was just such an epic way to end the first part of this three-part finale.
Not to mention, I felt like the Sentinel aspect of it was executed so well. Like, it was the perfect amount of creepy. And they had like a Star Wars Order 66, I think it's Order 66 vibe, you know, where all these humans are now just turning. But yeah, it's got the mix of the zombie thing. I thought it was really effective.
And, you know, it was kind of dark that, you know, these are people that don't know that they're basically Sentinel sleeper agents. And, you know, one thing that I think you can do in an X-Men comic or an X-Men cartoon that you can't in even like a Spider-Man context, for kind of some of the reasons that we've talked about, is like, you can just like, Wolverine is just cutting these people in half, you know, like, which is,
but they're healing too. Part of it.
So, yeah, that's true.
They were getting slashed, and also they have a healing power too.
Yeah, so I guess that's fair.
But yeah, like, some of these X-Men should be able to stop some of these people, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, if this were like a Spider-Man situation, you know, you're never going to see Spider-Man like cut anybody in half, even if they do have the ability to recover. Like, he would be so conflicted about, sure, like, how do I help these people without hurting them? You know, and there's something about, like, the X-Men, because of, like, the anger and the persecution, there's more of this kind of, like, righteous...
You attacked us, like, so here we go.
Yeah, yeah. It does feel like kind of more of a war for survival. It's not that they're like superheroes in the same way. So it feels more like we're going into different territory, which kind of does fit with the X-Men movies as well. Like, you know, we talked about in our X2 episode, like, that is one of the things that makes Wolverine kind of unique, even from MCU heroes, is that he's willing to just kind of go to town on people.
So only two episodes left. I'm with you that so far my ranking then would be 5-8, which is today, mm-hmm, 3-7-2-1-6-4, which is getting comical to rank them. But my point of saying that is today's episode was like a let's freaking go minus, or like a let's go plus. Like, we're right in the really, really good range. Not maybe to the same degree that after Remember It, where I called you, I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, that's probably the one. But this was like the end of this episode, that entire attack. And I was feeling it. I was in.
It was. I was feeling that. It just different things. Like, you know, the episode 5, it was so much that like Infinity War feeling of like, oh my gosh, like what turn did this just take? And then you're kind of left trying to figure out how to feel about it. Here, I think, even though it is really dark, like I was saying, there are more there are so many fun Easter egg world building things wrapped into an episode that doesn't even have to rely on those. Like, there's also this just like really compelling X-Men story. Like, I love the structure of this whole season. Like, if we're looking at episode 5 as the midpoint, and how like we kind of had this little period of these disconnected episodes leading into it and leading out of it, and now we're kind of bookending it back at where we were at the start with just some classic like X-Men taking on Sentinels, and yeah, like the Summers all in the car together, and like there are just some good like fist pump, mm-hmm, moments here, but in a way that feels like there's still so much tension building, and I really have no idea what's going to happen moving into the next two episodes.
What a journey we've been on with this X-Men stuff, especially for me, having never seen X-Men 95, 6 or whatever, and now watching X-Men 97, and then having such a faint memory of some of these X-Men live action films. So in closing,
man,
here's where we're at. A little state of the union for our audience. Let's see. So this has got two episodes left. Then we'll be talking MCU stuff for a little while, maybe diving, mm-hmm, back into our rewatch as we head toward Deadpool, which is in July. So it's now May, a few months away. Over on Friends from Work Plus, like you mentioned, you have a new Comics Corner episode out, but we're also working our way through the live X-Men films, live action X-Men, mm-hmm, films. And even if you're not a supporter of Friends from Work Plus or a subscriber, you can still be watching those films with us. And a lot of that conversation is happening on Discord. So there are Discord channels. You can find our Discord, I haven't said this in a long time, by going to our website, theffwpodcast.com. And there's an Engage tab. And under that Engage tab is all this stuff. But you can find our Discord channel where a lot of fun conversations happening. But we just finished Last Stand, right? And The Wolverine will be this week. It's hard to stay on track.
Yeah.
And then we're doing Days of Future Past. And then we have scheduled some just generic Fox-verse type stuff, because we think there will, mm-hmm, be some other non-X-Men Fox type things in play here with Deadpool. So it's been really, really fun. And it's just been a wild journey. We're kind of getting close to wrapping here with X-Men 97 and then shifting gears a little bit. But,
well,
go ahead.
I also, speaking of the kind of wild journey, I wanted to point out our Sunday Post newsletter that went out this last week. We kind of got a chance to dig into the state of the multiverse, so to speak.
Okay.
Just because, you know, you and I have talked about that some, just trying to make sense of where even just all the live action
good point
properties have left things between like Loki and the Marvels and Quantumania and Multiverse of Madness. And so given the new trailer for Deadpool 3 and what that shows, because I don't know if you saw like that there's a like a Hazael, I think, is that his name? The like red Nightcrawler guy from First Class.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Like, you know, it's like he seems to be in the trailer briefly.
Oh, I didn't see that. Well, he's dead at the end of by Days of Future Past, he's dead.
Yeah, Hazael. That's I think, and I don't know if they're the same actors or not, because it's kind of from far away, but I think there's also like a Lady Deathstrike appearance, like the which I don't think she ever gets that formal title in the movies, but in X2, the woman with like the finger claws.
Okay, I didn't recognize the name, but I know who
you're
talking
about. I don't think that's the name of the character, but I don't think that they ever, but I forget how they refer to her in the movie.
Point
but
like is,
it looks like she's appearing
even more than we were talking about.
Yeah. I mean, I think it looks as though they could be pulling from like any number of things, including, you know, we've already talked about Daredevil 2003 and maybe some Fantastic Four 2005 stuff. So anyway, it was fun to talk about what we think we know about the multiverse now, what we think that Deadpool might do with that. And
there's a Michael B. Jordan Fantastic Four film too, right? We haven't even really referenced.
Yeah, yet. Man, which I've actually never seen.
Oh, wow. We might have to do that just for fun.
That'll probably be a pre Fantastic Four 2025 movie.
I know we're telling our audience way too many things. There's a limited bandwidth and we're breaking our own rule here. I also just want to add that the next movie on my, the next movie on my screener list is Planet of the Apes, which is May 10. So that's this week.
Nice.
I want to go to a screener and I think I will, but I'm going to be in Charlotte. And so I don't know if I have access to the same screeners in Charlotte, which is a bummer because I've been looking forward to them. But even if I don't have a screener, I'm probably going to try to get an episode out on that film, even if it's solo or with you or somebody, just because I am a huge fan of the rebooted three trilogy films of Planet of the Apes. And now this is like a follow-up basically to that. And I'm really intrigued about what they're following up on. So I hope that's really good too. I know we have some questions and concerns. Anyways, that's coming up too. So let me just say this. Thank you so much to everybody for listening. We say that every week, but we really mean it. It does allow Robbie and I to keep doing this. There are so many ways for you to get involved beyond just listening. If you're interested, Friends From Work Plus, Discord channel, our website, the FFWpodcast.com, Friends From Work merch, supporting our sponsors is another way, and checking out Screensaver in these episodes. So much going on. We're excited to have you here. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you right back here next time on Friends From Work.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.